Do you remember Malala? Malala was the youngest ever winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, which she won because of her beautiful, courageous, and non-violent response to the almost successful attempt by the Taliban to murder her. She is a Muslim. Donald Trump is a Christian. You choose. It's actually worse than that. Donald Trump is a Presbyterian Christian. More and more we hear Christianity is good and Islam is bad. And the more I hear that, the more dangerous it sounds. It's easy enough to say what Islam is. It's much easier to say what Islam is than to say what Christianity is. There's a challenge for you. Put off, don't have your soup when you go home, but take a pencil and write down half a side of A4 on what Christianity is. And if you find that hard, let me tell you how easy it is to do it about Islam. Because here's what Islam is in five things. Islam has got five pillars, of which the first is the creed. Muslims declare their faith five times a day, over and over again. Muslims declare their faith, there is no God but God, and Muhammad is his prophet. That's the first thing. Second pillar of Islam is prayer. Five times a day, wherever they are, Muslims praying, and all Muslims everywhere always pray in exactly the same way. Third is charity. I'll be asking you these on the door on the way out, what these five are. The third is charity. It's a Muslim obligation to give a certain proportion of your income to the poor. And the fourth is fasting. Different occasions for fasting, and many people know that a strict fast is observed during the month of Ramadan, abstaining from all food and drink during the daylight hours. That's four. Just for a second, I'm going to be quiet and let you see if you can think what the fifth is, because you might know, but don't put your hand up, because I want to tell you. The fifth is pilgrimage. Every Muslim, unless excluded by illness or poverty, must make the holy journey to the holy city of Mecca at least once. And huge numbers make that pilgrimage every year. Islam is the only great religion of the world to take shape after the time of Jesus. It was just about the moment when Columba was fleeing from Ireland to make his way to settle in Iona that Muhammad was born in Mecca. And he grew up to be a deeply religious man who would often spend long, long periods of time in the desert hills of Arabia for days at a time, and became convinced that he had been called by God to deliver a special message to the people of Mecca. And these messages were called the Revelation. And you know the Arabic word for revelation. These messages were called Quran. Opposition to his preaching grew, and the people of Mecca persecuted these first Muslims. So in 622, Muhammad escaped and made a journey from Mecca to Medina, a journey which became so important for Islam that to this day, Islam dates the years from that journey. Muhammad escaped from Mecca settled in Medina, and there they listened to him. And a small community grew up among the Arab people there, and that community is still the ideal for Muslim people today. And when Muhammad died in 632, he had laid the foundations of a worldwide religion. He taught, and Muslims still teach, that life is about striving to do God's will. And I promise this is the only other Arabic word you're going to learn, but the Arabic word for striving is a word you know. It's jihad. Muslims teach that life is about striving to do God's will. And most of the time they're talking about the jihad of the heart, getting the heart right to do God's will. But sometimes, and this is where all the controversy and difficulty arises, sometimes they speak of the little jihad, which is the jihad of the sword, where under certain circumstances, Muslims are called on to take up arms to defend their faith. All Western people and all Christians think that's dreadful. But when I heard the conditions under which Muslims may take up the sword to defend their faith, described to me by a professor at Edinburgh University, I was astonished. Because they sounded to me almost exactly the conditions which, at a better university, I had learned were the conditions in which Christians may wage a just war. It's simply ignorant to say that Islam is a religion of war and Christianity is a religion of peace. And the Ten Commandments tell us we must not bear false witness against our neighbours. But it's in that context of the little jihad, taking up the sword to defend Islam, it's in that context that we Western Christian people must try to understand radical extremist Islamic groups. They take obscure and difficult texts from the Quran and they use them to elevate the little jihad of the sword into the fundamental principle of their... Remember we learned there were five principles and none of them is about taking up the sword, but they take obscure and difficult texts and make them the centre of the faith. These are awkward verses for most Muslims, but Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, Daesh, the so-called Islamic State, have made them the most important verses in their whole religion because they suit their political purpose of trying to arouse the Arab world against what they see as its humiliation by the West. Is it fair? Should Islam be judged by Osama bin Laden and Islamic State? Should Christianity be judged by Donald Trump? Or should Christianity be judged by the bloodthirsty cruelty of the Crusades? Or should Christianity be judged by the baptized European hands which lit the starter motors under Hitler's gas ovens? Jesus spoke about taking a beam out of our own eyes before we look at our neighbours. Forty years ago, if I had preached this kind of sermon, however unpopular, 40 years ago, this kind of sermon would have been not much more than a kind of academic exercise. Not now. Not now, when I tell you the safety of the world is at stake. It is no exaggeration to say that the safety of the world is at stake unless the religions of the world learn to understand each other, to understand each other, and to live with each other. A sermon about Islam in Dunfermline is not an academic exercise when the safety of British Muslims is at stake. A few weeks ago, I was one of a small group of Abbey members and other Christians who were the guests of the local Muslim community at the Central Mosque. Mostly, it was a fascinating and a happy occasion. I felt very much at home because they served us Tunnock's caramel wafers. But at one stage, their faces darkened. It was when we asked them about racism and anti-Islamic attacks in Scotland, worse than 5 years ago, much worse in the last year than ever before, was the reply. And I was ashamed. The peace of Scotland is at stake unless Christians and Muslims learn to love each other. In Wheaton College, which is a Christian college in the United States, a professor of theology has been suspended with a view to being fired. What must the occasion be in which it's likely that she will be fired? Well, against an explosion of anti-Islamic anger on Facebook, she posted on Facebook that she believed that Christians and Muslims worship the same God. What do you think? What do you think? You've heard a little of the history, a little of the theology, and a little of the politics. Here's two things I want you to listen to, which might help you to make up your own mind. One is from the Quran, and the other is a little story. Both of them together are Muslim preaching about the God they believe in. The first chapter of the Quran is specially sacred to Muslims. It's part of every act of worship. It's said before the beginning of journeys made by pious Muslims. It's breathed into the ear of every baby at birth. And it's breathed into the ear of anyone reaching the point of death. Listen, this is what Muslims believe. Praise belongs to God, Lord of the world, the Lord of mercy, the giver of mercy, Master of the Day of Judgment. It is you we worship. It is you we ask for help. Guide us in the straight path. What do you think? Do Christians and Muslims worship the same God in different ways? Or do they worship different gods? Here's the wee story. The great Sufi, Abu Ajami, went to bathe in the river one day. He left his coat unattended on the bank. Hassan of Basra passed by, and seeing this coat lying unattended on the bank, and thinking it had been left there through someone's carelessness, he decided to stand guard over it until the owner showed up. When Habib came looking for his coat, Hassan said, "In whose care did you leave this coat of yours when you went to bathe in the river? It could have been stolen." Habib replied, "I left it in the care of him who gave you the task of standing guard over it." What do you think?
Amen.